Welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Courtney Jordan wasn't good at swimming, until she was. The 12-time medalist has been to three Paralympic Games, where she's racked up one gold, eight silvers, and three bronzes for Team USA. Courtney has cerebral palsy, and she talked about growing up swimming against able-bodied athletes, which at times both discouraged and motivated her. Courtney didn't really know people with disabilities growing up, and she told me about the impact it had on her when she was finally introduced to the Paralympics. She also talked about some of the misconceptions that surround the Paralympics and what she wished people knew about Paralympians. Courtney is also a fourth grade teacher, and we talked about inspiring her students and the time she has wanted to give up swimming. We spoke right after Courtney got back from Rio. Here's our conversation. So you just got back from Rio, right?
I did, on Wednesday, like 7:30 at night.
Are you jet lagged?
I'm so tired.
What was Rio like?
Rio was beautiful. It's an amazing country, and they totally pulled out all the stops for us. They made it so all of our buildings were the best possible buildings they could give us, and all the accommodations were wonderful. I was lucky to be a part of it.
So all of the kind of like Olympic fears about Rio ended up being unfounded in your case?
Yeah, I think it was so much negativity in the media, and it ended up being a really great experience. I mean, the venues were beautiful. The pool was incredible. I was very excited to swim in that. I barely saw any mosquitoes. I don't know what else was. There was a bunch of concerns about the plumbing. I mean, it wasn't as advanced as the United States plumbing, but it wasn't ever an issue for me.
So what makes for an amazing pool?
I don't know, just it felt fast. It's hard to explain unless you're a swimmer, but you can tell the difference between a really nice pool. It was clean and the water just felt really, it felt good when you felt like you were slicing through the water. I think that also had to do with my training. My coach did a really good job preparing me.
Do you have to prepare a lot for like different types of pools?
No, because I mean, 50 meters is 50 meters. I don't think there's ever been like a type of pool that was really bad. I mean, there's some pools that are like older, so the walls and the turns might be a little bit different because the walls might be a little bit more deteriorated or something, so it's kind of scratchy. And those are the kind of pools that I don't really enjoy that much. But other than that, 50 meters is 50 meters.
So you took home a few more medals when you were in Rio. You're being very humble.
I did.
Tell me about that.
So I was able to get four more. So now my total of medals is 12.
Congratulations.
So, thank you so much. I have total, I have one gold, eight silver, and saying it slow because I think I'm counting wrong, and three bronze.
That's when you know you've made it, when you can't keep track of your medal count.
Well, it's new. I just got four from Rio. So I've been lucky to be able to get four from each games that I've been to because it's my third.
And did things play out how you were expecting in Rio?
So actually, it was a lot different just because there were some people there that I had never raced against before. So as an experienced Paralympian, the one thing that I always tell the rookies is you never know what to expect. You could go in there and you could be third in the world and you could not make it back to finals. Everyone's there is going to be fast. They're going to be setting world records. They're going to be setting Paralympic records. So it doesn't matter what you're going as. You can't really go in expecting anything because you just got to do your best.
So tell me about the Paralympics. What are the Paralympics?
The Paralympics are the Olympics for people with physical disabilities. It has been going on since the 1950s. It was developed originally for wounded war veterans, and it became a whole spectrum of disabilities. We have people with disabilities like me with neurological conditions. You have people who are visually impaired. You have people who are amputees. We have a large spectrum, and then you're put in a classification, so you race or compete against people with a similar classification so that it's an even playing field, and it's the second largest sporting competition in the world. It's gaining a lot more attention in the United States. It's pretty popular everywhere else, but we're picking it up pretty quickly, which I'm proud of.
Why isn't it as popular in the United States, do you think?
I think it just has to do with the amount of coverage that we've gotten in the past. This year was the first year that we had ever had a significant amount of coverage, in my opinion. In London, we received 2.5 hours of coverage. And this time we received over 70 hours, which is...
Is that for swimming or for the whole Paralympics?
For the entire Paralympics.
Wow.
So there was only two and a half hour special for London, even though we were there for 10 days. So the coverage, in my opinion, was not good enough. And it's definitely going in the right direction. It's grown exponentially. We're up to 70 hours for all sports once again through NBC and NBCSN, which I was extremely thankful for because I was actually... My friends were able to watch on TV. It's also streamed live, like you can go online and watch it. But I think that a lot of people saw it this time that had never seen it before. And if you watch it once, you're going to be hooked. It's just like it has the same amount of competition and competitive spirit that the Olympics has. But I think there's another added layer to it because we all have disabilities. We train the same as the Olympics. I have the same training regimen as any Olympian, except I also teach school. So that's an added layer. And then I do it with a disability.
And so in a way, it's like a lot of those stories that people are drawn to about athletes, they're kind of built into the Paralympics, it seems, because people love athletes who have overcome challenges, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that in Paralympics, everyone has a story. Everyone has a unique story that they've overcome something. In the Olympics, you hear about these amazing stories of people who have fought against poverty or homelessness or some sort of thing that they had to overcome. But in the Paralympics, it's built into every single story. You had to overcome yourself. And then on top of that, you have people who are overcoming situations as well.
So why do you think it is now picking up popularity? Is that just a lot of advocacy on the Paralympics part, or why are more people in the U.S. getting into this?
I mean, I think that, like I said earlier, once you see it once, you're going to want to follow it again. And you get caught up in these wonderful stories. I mean, everyone that I've met in Paralympics is an incredible person. And they're people that you want to support and you want to see them do well. I think that America in general loves the Olympics. And they are always sad when it's over. But it's not really over. You have 2 more weeks. After 2 weeks of waiting, a 2-week intermission, you have the Paralympics. And we're just as incredible, just as competitive. And I think that also we've become Team USA as a governing body. We're working more to being Team USA instead of Olympics and Paralympics. We're kind of coming together to be Team USA because we are one team. We're under one flag. And that has helped a lot to make it have more recognition.
When did you start swimming?
I started swimming when I was 7 years old. Well, I started swimming when I was like 3, but that was like swimming lessons and just splashing around. My parents were really big advocates of swimming for safety purposes, so they wanted me to be able to learn how to swim in case I ever fell in accidentally or was in a situation where I needed to swim that I would know how to. I started swimming on a swim team when I was 7. I come from a swimming family, so I didn't really have a choice. My grandpa was one of the founders of the Swimming Hall of Fame in Florida. My dad was a nationally ranked swimmer. He had an age group record for like 30 years in the 50 free, and my sister was a state champion swimmer. And I wanted to do whatever my sister was doing. So she was swimming every day at the pool. I was already there. My mom was driving both of us, so I might as well swim too. And swimming for me, I didn't really approach it with the best attitude in the beginning because I was terrified. My body tends to fail me a lot on land, and I was concerned that it would do the same in the water. But it's actually like a safe haven for me because when I'm in the water, it's pain-free. And I can kind of not worry about having to use my left side as much because if I don't use my left side in the water, my right side can compensate. On land, I can't do that. So the water is actually like a better place for me and I don't have pain when I'm in the water. With my disability, there's a lot of pain that's involved. My limbs are different lengths and just the pressure that goes into everyday walking is a very painful process for me. So when I'm in the water, the pressure is alleviated. And the pain isn't there. So I feel like I get to be my age. I feel like I'm walking around sometimes and I feel like I'm an old person. But when I'm in the water, I feel young and like a weight is lifted off my shoulders. So it was kind of like a blessing. It kind of directed me to where I was supposed to be.
And that's really incredible because I feel like most often sports are associated with pain and like
there's pain.
Being an Olympian or Paralympian sounds so painful to me. So that's kind of really beautiful that you've been able to find a pain-free experience in it.
It's not totally pain-free, but it's like the exercise pain. don't worry, there's pain.
Yes, I guess you wouldn't be an athlete without some level of that, right?
Yeah.
So where did you grow up? You were growing up around pools, if your parents were afraid that you might fall in one?
Yeah, so my dad was actually in the military, so I've moved 13 times. So I've grown up in America. That's what I tell people because the list is very long.
Is there a place that you consider a kind of hometown or that you spent more time in than others?
So I consider Henderson, Nevada my hometown because that's where my family is and home is where your family is, right?
What was growing up moving around a lot like?
I enjoyed it. I think that it made me the person that I am. I feel like I'm very good at new situations and talking to people that I've just met because of having to move around so much. We would move somewhere and we would be there for a year. So I had to make friends quick and I had to get accustomed to things quick. So it made me a very flexible and open, laid back kind of person because I had to be used to switching. I had to be used to change. So I think it was a good thing for me and I got to see all over the country, which is really cool.
Did swimming follow you to each of these places that you moved?
Yeah, and the best part of thing about swimming is it's like an instant home. You know, swim team is so close. You see these people every day for 2 hours a day. They're your best friends outside of school. Sometimes they go to school with you. I'm still friends with the people that I swam with through high school because we spent every day together. Even on Sunday or Saturdays, we're there together for 2 to 3 hours training. So, and you do stuff, you're doing stuff that no one else is doing. Like you're up, especially in high school and college, like I'd be up before school to train. And I think it's when you have something in common like that with people, it creates a really strong bond. So I'm really close with all my college friends and my high school swimming friends because we went through that together.
Well, you mentioned having kind of a bad attitude about swimming in the beginning. Were you good at it at first?
No, I was absolutely terrible. I remember my first swim meet, my mom just wanted me to finish and like not have the lifeguard save me. Like that was the goal. I don't know if people are familiar with swimming and times, but and usually when you finish a 25, my current time to swim a 25 is probably like 14 to 15 seconds. A 25 is one length of a pool in a short course or like college length pool. And that's the size pool that you swim in age group swimming to for the majority of the year. So it takes me 14 to 15 seconds now. The first time that I swam it, it took me a minute and 43 seconds to finish. I was really slow. And I think the lifeguard was prepared to jump in.
So why did you stick with it?
I liked how I felt in the water. It was like a sense of freedom that I had never felt before. When I'm on land, I have to be thinking all the time, like move your right leg, do this, don't fall. Balance is something that I'm always thinking about. I have all these things going around in my head. And when I'm just like floating in the water, I don't have to think about any of those things. It's like my head's finally clear. It's like sleeping at night, like laying in your bed. It's final moment of like being able to relax. I guess that's what most people feel like all the time. But that's like the rare moment when I feel at peace and not like I have to think about a ton of things.
When did you start getting good?
I think I started getting good. I could be totally wrong, but in my opinion, I got good at swimming when I was about 13. And it's an interesting thing because it's when I was starting to think about quitting. Because I started, when you're 13, you start comparing yourself to others more. So I was comparing myself to others and I realized I was a lot slower than everyone else. And it was frustrating because I was working harder than everyone else, in my opinion. Because I was there every single day, I would get out of the pool and I had the reddest face. Everyone would be laughing and having a good time and I would be trying to go faster and just almost be making myself sick trying to work so hard in swim practice. And it wasn't getting the results that I wanted because people who I felt like weren't trying as hard wouldn't really go to swim practice would be a lot faster than me, 10, 20 seconds faster than me in events. And so it was getting frustrating and I was really good at school. Like school came pretty easy for me and I got good grades. And so I was trying to look into other avenues that I could succeed in. Even though I love swimming, I was like, well, I'm not going to be able to do this in college. I'm not going to be able to do this like as a career because that's what I was kind of told. I mean, I never saw anyone like me. I didn't know anyone like me with a disability like mine that was succeeding in sport. I mean, that wasn't in books. That wasn't in TV shows. I had no role model to follow. I had no guide for this. I knew that I loved swimming, but I didn't think it was a possibility for that I could do it in college or for a professional career.
Do you think things would have been different for you at that time if you had that role model to look up to?
Absolutely. One of my main goals as a Paralympic athlete is to reach out to as many swimmers that I can that are up and coming swimmers or any people in general with disabilities who are interested in sports and have a competitive drive, because I think it's important to guide them in and out of the water. I have a few girls in particular that have my disability, and I really like to lend a hand to them just because, I mean, I can give some advice on how to put your hair up, how to what to do with shoes, because there are certain shoes that I can't wear. I couldn't put my hair up until I was 15 because my hand doesn't really have the basic motor functions. So putting it up with one hand is kind of tricky. So I have some tricks for that. And then I can't wear flip-flops. So I kind of can tie something on the back if I want to wear flip-flops. Just tricks like that I teach them, because it's something like my mom couldn't teach me because she does it with two hands. And their parents can't teach them because they don't know how to do it either. And it's something where I can step in and kind of help fill that void. And I can also be a role model, and that shows them that they can do whatever they want. I mean, they don't have to swim. They don't have to even like sports, but they can see that like there's no limitations. Just because we have this certain body, we just have to find a different way to do it.
So going back to that time when you were 13, when you're like reckoning with wanting to quit, but also getting good, why didn't you quit? What kept you going?
So I was invited to a Paralympic swim meet when I was 13 years old. It was in San Diego, and I went there and I swam 7 events and I won all of them. And I remember being really confused because I had never won anything in my life athletically. And it was a really good feeling. I was like, this is fun. Like, I like winning. And I had never had a taste of that before. I had always come in last. Like, my goal every swim meet that I went to that with able-bodied swimming was to not get last. Like, that was the goal. If I beat one person, I was like, woohoo, like, this is it. Like, it was a good day. And then I went into Paralympic swimming and I was first. And I was like, this is so much fun. Like, I think that's when my, like, competitive drive was unleashed. I'd always, like, kept it hidden because there was no way that I could win. So it kind of sucks if you're competitive and you're never going to win. So I went to this Paralympic swim meet. And then I loved it so much that I went the next year as well. So I went when I was 14. And when I was 14, I went back and I won everything again. And I spoke with Michael DeMarco and Karen DeMarco. Michael DeMarco is a fellow Paralympian. And he told me, you are one of the most talented swimmers I've seen in a very long time. And he's like, I've been in this sport for 10 years at least, and I've never seen someone quite so naturally talented. You need to go to nationals. And I was 14, so I was like, okay, I'm 14, so I'm just going to go back and start high school instead. And he told me that I should go to nationals, and it was in Texas, and my mom's from Texas, so she was all for going to nationals. So we went that summer, and I swam the 400 free, 100 back, 50 free, and 100 free at this meet. This was my first experience with Paralympics. And I got internationally classified as a 7, which means they looked at me and they ran tests on me. There's a bench test and a swim test. The bench test and the swim test combined gives you a total score and shows you and puts you in a classification with other swimmers who are equal in ability. So I was placed as a S7 and I swam my events. I won the 100 backstroke. I thought that was pretty impressive. But then I swam the 400 freestyle. And the 400 freestyle, it wasn't something that I enjoyed that much because it's a long distance race. And I swam it next to Aaron Popovich, who was in my classification. And I knew nothing about Paralympics, so I did not know who she was, which is ridiculous now because she's like this amazing hero in Paralympic sport. So I can't imagine not knowing who she is now. She was won 14 gold medals, I believe. I raced against her and I got second to her. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like really good. I was 15 and I think she was in her 20s. So I was just like stoked that I was able to keep up with her. And I finished second to her. Little did I know that she was first in the world in that event. And me finishing second meant that I was second in the world in that event at 15 years old. At that event also, it was trials for world championships. I had no idea that was happening. So after I swam that event, I was second in the world and I made the world championship team. And I was on my way to South Africa in 2006. And as a high school sophomore, I was swimming in the world championships. And that's when I was like, well, I can do this as a sport. You know, it was a whirlwind kind of thing of, I'm not going to quit now because this is a possibility for me. I didn't know that had existed before.
Yeah, it makes me think that there must be so many like amazing Paralympic athletes out there, because for you, like, coming second in the world and not even knowing it until that mm-hmm. moment, it sounds like there's just not a lot of visibility or infrastructure.
Yeah, that's exactly our plan moving forward through Tokyo is we did get a lot more coverage this year in 2016, but this quad of 2016 to 2020, we really need to focus on finding those athletes that are disabled and want to participate in sport, want to go to this big stage and helping them grow as an athlete these 4 years before Tokyo. I think there are a ton of athletes out there with disabilities who don't know about the Paralympics or don't know about its credibility, who confuse it with the Special Olympics, which is also an amazing organization, but it's not the same caliber of competitiveness. In Paralympics, there is one winner, there's one silver, one bronze. It's the exact same type of setup as the Olympics, and it is very hard to earn yourself a medal. You have to go through years of training, day after day of training for 5 hours a day, so it's tough.
Is it fair to say that, like, knowing you could win when you first did that event in California, that's what lit your competitive spark? I mean, it seems like it would be easy to get defeatist if you're competing against these able-bodied athletes and it's just not a level playing field.
Yeah, I think that winning once in that type of environment totally changed my outlook on sport in general, because I think that losing weekend after weekend after weekend kind of put in my mind, like, well, no matter what I do, I'm gonna get last. So I mean, I kept trying because that's just who I am. Like, I was gonna work as hard as I could and just try to focus on my own times. I also had an amazing mom and dad who would always sit me down and say, you know, your body is not like other people's. You can't compare yourself to these other kids because you're not the same. So you even keeping up with them is a very big accomplishment. But I mean, I'm very competitive. So I was also like, well, I want to win. I don't care. But I think that winning once in the Paralympic field made me recognize how good of an athlete I was, because athletes who were like me, I was able to beat. I was able to compete with them. And then I also think that it helped me swim against able-bodied swimmers. I think that it gave me more drive to be like, well, I'm one of the top athletes in the world. I can beat these people too. And so it drove me to want to compete against my able-bodied counterparts as well. And by the time I was in high school, I was top 10 in the region in swimming.
And that was among able-bodied swimmers also, yeah.
Yeah, and I was able to swim in college as well in a Division III swim team.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about the Paralympics?
I think the biggest misconception is that people confuse us with the Special Olympics. Like I said earlier, it is an amazing organization, but it's not the same. Our level of competition is extremely fierce. I train the same amount as an Olympian, and I have to put in a lot of hard work, and we are physically disabled. There is a cognitively disabled classification in swimming, but the majority of us are not cognitively disabled. It's just physically disabled. I also think that a misconception from that is that it's not as competitive as the Olympics. It's kind of easier to win a medal, and it's not. It's just as hard. There may be more medals that are awarded for different classifications, but it's still really hard to get on that podium. I don't know. I think that another misconception could possibly be just in general that they don't know about it. Like, I feel like the general awareness is totally lacking, and it's definitely growing. But I remember when I started in the sport, I would tell people that I was a Paralympian and they wouldn't even know what that was. Now it's a lot better. We have a lot of sponsors, Olympic sponsors, who are sponsoring Paralympic and Olympic athletes and doing that on the same level. And that awareness, that exposure is really helping show that we are as equal to the Olympics. Because the word para, I think a lot of people think it stands for like paraplegic, like some sort of disability, but it actually stands for parallel, because it is parallel to the Olympics. And that was what it was intended to be, is equal to the Olympics. And unfortunately, in the past, it hasn't been that way, but I'm really excited about where we're going. And I think that in the future, with the amount of sponsors who are helping and the amount of people who are seeing it for the first time, it's going to be up there definitely in the future. For me personally, I've been trying to get sponsors and trying to get help for a number of years. I've been in the sport for 10 years. And after I finished my college career 3 years ago, I started looking for sponsorships, and there were very limited sponsorships available, and it was very hard for me to, I wanted to find representation. I wanted to be a professional athlete, and there just weren't very many opportunities out there. I was chosen to be sponsored by 24 Hour Fitness, and it was an amazing opportunity. At the time, I was working 3 jobs and teaching full-time and getting my master's degree and training in order to stay afloat, in order to fulfill my dream. And with the help from 24 Hour Fitness, I was able to quit my jobs, which was incredible, and just focus on school and swimming. And it is something that's really hard to do because, unfortunately, if you are a Paralympian, you usually cannot just focus on your sport. There are people living at the Olympic Training Center, and there are a few people here or there who are able to financially support themselves. But it's very rare that you can be just a Paralympic athlete and not have some sort of income coming in.
At that time when you were going to school and working 3 jobs and training, I mean, did you ever want to give up the swimming, or what had to give at that time in your life?
Honestly, I didn't have a social life. It's so sad to say, but like, I didn't have time to hang out with friends. I didn't have my sleep. I wasn't sleeping that much. I would get up at 4. I would go to bed at 11, and I would do it all over again. And I think it definitely was detrimental to my performance at that time because I was so tired, and my quality of life wasn't great. I mean, I was going towards a goal and I was able to achieve that goal, but I was so burnt out all the time. And I mean, my jobs weren't terrible. I was working at a daycare center and I was working with kids. I was teaching swim lessons. I was running birthday parties. It was all around kids, which is what I love to do. But it was just, I was so tired, and it was very draining.
So now what does it feel like after Rio?
I am still exhausted, but for different reasons. On Wednesday, I got back at 7:30, or on Tuesday, I got back at 7:30, sorry. And on Wednesday, I started school. I started teaching full-time.
And you teach fourth grade.
Yes, I teach fourth grade math and science, or math and content, because we rotate science and social studies and health. And I teach at Bowman Bridge Elementary School in Howard County. It is awesome. It's where I did my internship, so I know a lot of the kids there. So it was kind of like coming home. It was the best possible situation because they worked it out for me so that I had a math interventionist working and being the full-time teacher, so I didn't need a long-term sub. And she had control of my classroom, and we're going to co-teach this next week. So she'll be in the classroom with me, helping me plan and understand the kids and get to know them and help me with a grade book and kind of get settled. All the things that you're supposed to find out your first week of school, but I wasn't here for. So it's good. It's overwhelming right now, but I know that I'm going to settle into it, and I'm already completely in love with both of my classes.
Were the kids watching you swim?
Yes. I have the best pictures of them and videos of them just screaming. I don't know how other classes are getting work done, but they had Miss Jordan time. So every day in the morning, whenever I was swimming in the heats in the morning, they would find out and they would watch my race in the morning. And so I have pictures of kids with their arms up screaming for me to go faster or cheering when I won. And it was just the best type of environment because every single classroom was completely supportive. And then when I came home, it was basically a parade for my homecoming. And I got to walk through all the kids line the hallways, and I was able to walk through and give them all high fives and hugs. And they were all chanting USA, which was really cool.
What made you want to be a teacher?
I have wanted to be a teacher since I was 4 years old. I honestly don't think that there's any more honorable position than being able to be with these kids for 9 months. I see them more during the day than their family does. And I'm able to witness their learning, witness them growing into adults. I mean, they're little adults because they're 9. But I get to see so much growth and so much kindness. I love watching my kids be kind. That's one of my favorite things. I want to really help them become not only better at math and science and social studies and health, but I want to help them become good classmates, good teammates. I want them to be proud of themselves and the work that they're doing, and to be able to be a small part of their life in that way. I'm very honored and humbled to be in that position.
And do you think your swimming helps them do that and feeds into that?
Yeah, I think that my Paralympic career is motivation for them. I was told on the first day that one of my students, Angie, actually was going to quit piano and decided to continue because of me. That she hadn't even met me yet, but she knew my story, and she knew that I wasn't very good at swimming when I started, but I kept going, and I became really good. And so she decided to continue with piano. And yesterday we had a fun run at our school to raise money. And one of my students was very tired in the run. And I told him, well, you can sit out, you can get some water, and then you can walk or you can do whatever. And he's like, I'm going to get some water. But don't worry, Miss Jordan, I told you that I'd never give up on you, and I never will. And so just that kind of mentality that I was able to model for them by going through the Paralympics and talk to them about, I was able to talk to the whole fourth grade when I got home and tell them my experience and share how I had to persevere through that week of Rio, because it was kind of a rough week competitively. I was able to do that, and I told them I did that because I had them in my mind. I was thinking of them, and that's why I was able to persevere, because I wanted to show them what can happen when you do persevere. In Rio, I was going into Rio as one of the most decorated athletes from Worlds the previous year. But like I said, anything can happen in games. And at the games, I went in third for the 100 backstroke. I had received bronze at Worlds. But then I came into the games and I ended up seventh because it was such a close race. Everyone was in 1 second, but I ended up seventh. And that was really devastating for me just because it was the first time that I had gone into a games and I had always won a medal on the first day. And so that was kind of a different experience for me and something I had to cope with. But I thought about my kids and I thought about how I would want them to see me. Like if they were watching me right then, what I would want them to see. So I congratulated the people who won, and I picked my head up and I started focusing on the next race. And the next race was my 50 freestyle, which is kind of my baby race because I won gold in it in 2008. And I've been on top for the majority of the year since. So for the past decade, I've usually been in first or second position. And I swam the 50 and I got fourth. And I don't know if you've ever gotten fourth at a Paralympic Games.
I can't say I have.
But it's probably the most devastating position you can be in because you just missed at the podium. And it's heart-wrenching, especially when I've medaled in that race for 10 years. So for longer than my kids have been, my fourth graders, I call them my kids, have been alive, I've been on top in the top three in the world. So to be fourth was really harsh. And I went away and I had time to think about it and process it. And the same thing, I was like, well, how would I want my kids to handle this? Because at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I feel like I'm just done. I felt defeated. But I was like, I can't quit because of my kids and because of my legacy. Like, I want it to be a positive one. So I swam my next race. And in the ready room, I was thinking about my kids. I was like, I want to bring a medal back to them. I want to bring a medal back to them. And because of that, and because of how I was thinking, that was on my mind, I was able to get a silver in the 50 fly on the next race. And everything after that, I was able to medal in. It was kind of like once I hit a stride and then I kept going. And it was a really good situation. But that experience, I'm so grateful for, even though it was devastating and emotional at the time. I think it's a model for how I want my kids to be, because they're not going to get everything all at once. But if they keep trying, they will. And I think that watching me struggle in the first part and watching me succeed at the end shows them that they can do that as well.
What you are to your students, has there been anyone like that in your life?
I can think of a lot of people, actually. I'm very fortunate to be in a situation where I'm surrounded by really loving individuals. My parents, in the first place, are like the best human beings on the planet. I know everyone probably says that, but I think I'm telling the truth when I say that. My dad is incredibly smart and strong. He's a colonel. He was a colonel in the Air Force, so he was always smart and strong. And I think that's kind of the first things that you think of when you think of my dad. But I think that something that's really overlooked with him is his kindness and his selflessness. Because when he was in the Air Force, he actually gave up his dream. He was a fighter pilot. And there was this position in Germany that was his dream job. And he was awarded it, but it was when I was 3 years old. And I needed physical therapy. And the physical therapy provided in Germany wasn't equipped at the time to handle my needs. So he asked for a different position. So he turned down his dream job so that I could get the best medical care that I needed. And that, to me, speaks volumes about him as a person. And I think it's made me become how I am and how I act today. I really admire kindness and selflessness in others because of what he showed me. And the same with my mom. My mom drove me to swim practice every day, made me meals so that I would be able to eat and then do homework. And then she was always taking care of me and my sister when my dad was on long trips away with the military. She was taking care of us by herself. So she also is one of the strongest women I know and kindest. And I think that that's kind of made me who that I am today. But I think another person that doesn't get enough credit is my sister. Because my sister is the person that made me feel like I wasn't disabled and made me kind of recognize that I am more than my disability when we were little kids. And she did it so seamlessly. It was perfect. She was like the best possible sibling I could have received. My sister was very athletic and naturally talented at everything. Like if she threw a ball, it was going where it was supposed to go. If she kicked a ball, it was going where it was supposed to go. She was always moving, always running. She would run faster than the boys. She could swim faster than the boys. She could jump higher. She could beat them in arm wrestling. Any challenge. I mean, I remember one time she just dove off the high dive at like 5 because she, like, no fear, so strong. And then there was me. And when I'm pretty capable now. And I'm pretty strong now. But when I was little, I could barely walk. Like, walking was very hard. I wore a brace on my leg to get places. And I was tired all the time. I mean, I'm still tired all the time. But when I was 4, I was in pain and I was tired. And that's not normal for a 4-year-old. They're supposed to be running around. And I would try to run, but I'd kind of go in circles. But my sister never let that be an excuse for me. I'd be like, I'm tired. And she'd be like, I don't care. I want to play. Like, come play with me. And I would go play with her. And I'd be like, all right, well, you're right. This isn't an excuse. I got to go play. And she would always kind of accommodate for me without really being asked to or told to. She would just know that that's what she was supposed to do. Like, she was really big into climbing trees. And she would push the trampoline under, this little small trampoline. She would push it under the tree so that I could jump on the trampoline and get on the first branch. So that I would be climbing a tree too, even though I couldn't climb a tree. I wasn't strong enough to pull myself up. So she made it so that there was a way to. Or when we were playing soccer, she would bring a chair out so that I could sit and be a goalie, or I could sit when I'm tired, but I was still there. I was still present. Or she learned how to ride a bike with me because I couldn't really ride a bike. And she learned how to ride a bike with me on the front or on the back so that I could feel what it was like so I wouldn't miss out. And I think that's made me who I am today, and that's helped me become, that was like a role model for me, because I feel like I'm a very inclusive person. I think it's one of my strengths is inclusivity. So when I'm working with my class, I kind of try to include the entire group. I notice when people are kind of slacking or if they're off in the back, I notice them and I try to get them engaged somehow. So I'm very grateful for my family because I think that they created who I am today.
And you've been a team captain before, right? On several occasions?
Yes. So I was team captain in 2012, 2014, and 2015.
I've also read that you are just called the team mom. Is that true?
That is true.
So have those motherly instincts and leadership qualities mm-hmm. always come naturally to you?
I think the motherly qualities have. I've always loved taking care of people and helping people out. Even in high school, they called me the team mom. I was the one who like brought extra snacks, drove people who didn't have rides, always make sure everyone had extra sunscreen. I had extra sunscreen in my bag in case someone forgot. I would pack extra snacks. I was like a little PTA mom by the time I was in high school. And I mean, I love that role. I love being able to help someone out. And I think that transferred over to my leadership. I don't think that I'm ever really been naturally like outgoing or charismatic. I think that I just lead by helping people. And that is what got me into those positions, is just the will to wanting to help people.
Is there something that you wish more people knew about you?
I think that people sometimes, I think this in just in general about disabilities, but I guess it can work with me too, obviously, because I have a disability. But I think one thing that I wish that people would know is I wish that they knew that my disability is part of me, but it's not completely me. And it's not going to stop me from doing anything. There are very few things that I say that I cannot do. I mean, even I'm trying to think of one and I can't. The only thing I can think of is like opening a water bottle is really hard. I can do it. The water's going to get everywhere, but I can do it. And I think that people kind of have a preconceived notion that I can't do something and they're kind of apprehensive. But I think it's just the perception that the country as a whole has on disability. I mean, it's not really, unless you know someone with a disability, you don't really experience it. It's not in movie or TVs or music. There aren't people with disabilities. I can't think of characters. I mean, the only thing that I can think of is Finding Nemo with people with disabilities, which is like a really big step in the right direction.
And that's not even people.
And that's not even people. That's fish.
Animated fish.
And when it is, it's kind of like not, it's like an it's used as inspiration. I mean, I don't want people to like cheer for me for tying my shoes in the morning. I mean, I'm just, that's a normal thing. Like I understand that people are inspired by my swimming and my, that type of thing, because that's a big accomplishment and not something that everyone does. But sometimes when you hear people say like, oh, like, I'm so proud of you for like getting to, you know, you hear the people who say like, oh, well, good, you did a great job like doing the simple things that normal people do, I guess normal, like everyone else does. And I don't think that those are accomplishments that we should be like cheered on for. I heard a really good speech. I don't remember who it was by, but a lady talked about how she was going to be like awarded an award for like being her, and because she was disabled. I think what it comes down to is everyone in the Paralympics and most people with disabilities, we just want to be seen as people first. And in the Paralympics, we want to be seen as athletes first. And then our disabilities come into play, I guess, when we're being separated into our classifications. But when it comes down to it, we're athletes and we don't want to be treated any differently or any special way. We just want to compete. We just want to be seen as the same as any other athlete you see on TV.
When do you feel like you came into your own as an athlete or as a person? And how did things change for you after that, if at all?
I think around the time when I started Paralympic swimming, I was able to come into my own. I think before then, I didn't know anyone with a disability. I didn't know if I was able, what I was doing was good enough, I guess. And to be able to have that support system and to be able to meet people who not only are like me, like they understand, they're competitive athletes, but they also have gone through similar struggles as me. I remember talking to Jessica Long, who's my roommate now, when I was 15 and she was 14. And even though her disability is different, she is a bilateral amputee, so she's missing both of her legs under her knees. So when I first met her, I remember her telling me this story about trying to get up this hill and how she couldn't get up the hill because of her prosthetics. And she just every day just tried to get up this hill. And I had a similar story in elementary school where all I wanted to do was cross the monkey bars. And I spent months just trying to cross these monkey bars because it was something that I couldn't do and everyone else could do. And I wanted to do it. And I was going to, it might take me longer, but gosh darn it, I'm going to do it too. And like having someone understand that kind of struggle, doing like a task that someone else would consider fairly easy and having to work harder for it, or kind of being looked at differently, or having a preconceived like expectation or something on us already before, like just from our physical appearance. I think that was a really good thing to meet a whole bunch of people like that. And it made me more comfortable with my skin, knowing that there were more people out there like me. And so then I think I became more comfortable with it also because I felt like maybe my disability was given to me for a reason. I don't really know if I've completely figured out that reason, but I think when I was in middle school, I was severely bullied, like severely. I was kicked, I was pushed, I was shoved, I was spit on, I was sneezed on, just really weird things. And that experience was terrible. I would come home crying all the time and I would try to justify it. I would be like, well, if I wasn't wearing, to be fair, not to be fair, because there's never excuse for bullying, but I did have glasses, braces, and a brace on my leg. So I was kind of like the prime target for bullies. And I just kept thinking to myself, if I wasn't disabled, maybe this wouldn't be happening. If I wasn't, because I just wanted to blend in. I wanted to be normal or able-bodied, because then I thought that's the reason they're noticing me. So I actually stopped wearing a brace in seventh grade so that they wouldn't notice me as much. It didn't really work at all. And I'm getting a brace again soon because I need one and I'm not vain anymore. But I think that bullying constantly gave me self-doubt. Like, obviously, like, if someone's bullying you every day, you're going to doubt yourself. But Paralympics gave me an outlet to show me that, like, I wasn't alone. I wasn't the only one like this, and that my body was okay. And it wasn't just okay, it was strong, and it was good, and it was getting me places. As I went from a place where, like, my body was the reason that I was a target for bullying and my situation, to my body was one of the reasons why I'm going to go to South Africa and Beijing, and I'm going to get to see the world, and I'm going to get to have these experiences and inspire people. I'm going to get to have experiences that no one else in my class, none of these bullies, are going to get to experience. So it was, I think that helped me come into my own and be more confident with who I am.
Are you going to the next Paralympics?
Sorry, it's a little too soon for me to think about that. I'm going to see how, I don't want to say completely no, because I think that a lot can happen. I want to see what happens with the classification system. There's a lot of controversy right now in the Paralympic world on classification system. And so I think that they're trying to review it and reorganize it. And if they do so, I want to see where I fall in the classification system and consider then if I want to continue, if I don't. After that, also, I'm older now. I'm 25, and I'm at a different place in my life than I was even 4 years ago when I was considering going to Rio. And I want to take time. I'm definitely not going to World Championships in 2017. I may end up going in 2018 to Pan Pacific Championships, especially if it's in New Zealand, because that's awesome, right? I would love to go to New Zealand. But I definitely want to take a year off at least and reconsider things. It's my first year as a teacher, so I want to focus on that and give my kids absolutely all of me and work as hard as I can on that job. But I love it. It's what I've been doing for 10 years. And there's nothing quite like going to the games and representing your country, especially if you get on that podium and you get to see the flag raise in your honor. Like, you did that for your country. It's addicting. But I mean, at the same time, I have so many great things in my life. I have an amazing boyfriend that I would like to hopefully start a life with. And I have an amazing job, amazing friends. I'm in a really good spot where I know that if I did retire, I'd be very comfortable with where I am.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, Courtney. It was great speaking.
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Courtney Jordan. Female Trouble is on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. We're also on Twitter at FMLTrouble. If you ever have a suggestion for someone to be featured, tweet us or email me at qkelly@baltsun.com. You can find all of our past episodes at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble or soundcloud.com/femaletrouble. As always, our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. Thanks, and see you next week.